with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! There is nothing wrong with your speakers or with the reception of this radio program. I sound like crap. There will be periodic and intermediate silences during the program while I mute the microphone so as not to sneeze all over you. I figured you'd just prefer it that way. You'll have one presently, Kath. We are sending now. I was a little late getting started. You know that old thing about for one of a nail the shoe was lost, for one of the shoe the horse was lost, for one of the horse the right. Well, that's how tonight started. That's how Moran Monday started on the horn, this 13th day of February 2012. I went to save this evening's audio file, as I do here every evening, only to find that the batteries inside the wireless keyboard had gone quite dead. These are the things that don't happen to people who have staffs who run through a punch list before every show. Or maybe, you know, if I had a little more presence of mind. And so a mad scramble for two AAA batteries was underway. It was worse than Christmas morning and the toddler unable to play with its the Tickle Me Elmo. But no, by all appearances, we are sending quite nicely. I hope many of you tuned in for Dr. Bill O'Brien's PRISM West Virginia American History Series lecture yesterday, or not lecture, but chat sessions. It was absolutely fascinating, being as how it was Abraham Lincoln's birthday. The discussion focused on the myth versus the reality, the Emancipation Proclamation, the realities of the Civil War. It was fascinating, as are all of the PRISM West Virginia American History chats. Look, let's get this out of the way before we start the program. Please don't tune away. Here at 4 minutes past the hour, and a little bit late starting the program because of the aforementioned battery crisis, which was solved by the indefatigable Agnes, no doubt about it. Now, let's get this out. You know, we try to raise around $100. I'll say $100 because $100 every show simply because, well, that's what it takes to get us going. And I say $100 because this is a short month being February. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. Both of them, they're available under the tab Contribute. And an advisory, if you wish to not pay the transfer fees or not have PayPal dip into those, then all you need do is use the email at log into your PayPal, use the email address bobkincaid@gmail.com, choose personal and gift, and the fees will not be applied to you. So there's that. But and I want to thank our buddy John, Dr. John in New York, for his challenge Friday night, because we were able to meet Friday night's fundraising goals as a result of his dollar-for-dollar matching of the $50 that came in. It was much appreciated. So thank you very much. We will go forward through the week. A little program note is in order. I will not be behind the microphone on Friday because I will be, I'll be away. Called a long weekend, but luckily, you know, mercifully, this time it's something I actually want to do, as opposed to something, you know, going desperately wrong or hackers on the server or something like that. No, I will be away on Friday, and so We will have 4 days of shows this week. Cross your fingers. And I think we've got that phone issue from Friday sorted out, too. We will find that out in short order as well. Okay, so it's about 7 minutes past the hour, and barring... you know what it feels like when you use a dull knife to slice into a fresh onion? You know that whole weeping chemical weapons tear gas effect you get there in the kitchen when you're chopping it? Yeah, I got that going without the onion. I don't know where this came from, but my God, it's awful. I feel like my eyes are melting, and somebody's turned me upside down and poured concrete in my sinuses, and it's a real party. Bear with me throughout the evening. I will try not to subject you to too much of this upper respiratory misery. It is, however, Monday. We begin the week, and as you all know, Monday's special. Well, every day is special here, isn't it? I'd say so. Hey, look, there was one of those long pauses, unusually long, even for Bob. No. That's right. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up to this thin cybernetic veil of tent canvas. You can't see it there, but it is there all the same. And it is there, and it restrains right-wing weirdos, right-wing morons, right-wing hateful people, right-wingers of all stripe, hiding behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas for your delectation, for your amusement, for your edification. Because it's Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You can't tell the Morans without the right-wing Morans without a program. And this is the program that tells the right-wing Morans. They being right-wing Morans, you just can't tell them much. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Pregnant women are advised to avoid Moran Monday. And women are advised to hang on to their purses and their children, as right-wingers have been known to snatch both. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. That's it, that's it. It's Moran Monday on the horn. And I had an early nominee. We'll get to that. A story that I got in from News Ninja Gene last night. And it was in the early lead. But I have to say that it fell behind, A, because the subject matter of what I got from News Ninja Gene is so damned perfidious that it almost doesn't bear making light or making sport of it. It's too serious and too creepy. And then I saw stories coming out later in the day that just ran out past it and left it in the dust for sheer moranity. And we've got them. We've got them. I've got them. Right here. Where to start? Well, let's see. Yeah, let's start here. Let's start with a proposed statute in Arizona, Stan. Shall we? Amending Title 15, Chapter 1, Article 1, Arizona Revised Statutes, by adding Section 15-108 relating to public classrooms. I almost swore right there. There'd be a certain irony in it. You know what? I can feel it coming on, kind of like the Holy Ghost in a tent revival meeting. You might want to run little Timmy and little Johnny and little Janie and little Susie on out of the room, because Uncle Bob's feeling a little cranky. That and, well, anything's possible with an upper respiratory infection, because it just brings on the stupids. I might just fall over, because I think my balance is screwed up. It's all inner ear. What a party this is. I love stumbling around when I don't have a good 80-proof reason to do it. No, again, amending Title 15, Chapter 1, Article 1, Arizona Revised Statutes. Now, remember, the state of Arizona is being run by a junta of right-wing thugs who could not be trusted with the carcass of a dead skunk, let alone popular government. So let's read this, shall we? They're adding this chunk to the statutes whole, in toto, out of whole cloth. Section 15-108, Public Classrooms, semicolon, Compliance with Federal Standards for Media Broadcasts Concerning Obscenity, Indecency, and Profanity, semicolon, Violations, semicolon, Definition. Okay? A. If a person who provides... No, this is not coming through the rye, although there's some rye involved later. If a person who provides... If a body meet a body... Stop it, Bob. If a person who provides classroom instruction in a public school engages in speech or conduct that would violate the standards adopted by the Federal Communications Commission concerning obscenity, indecency, and profanity, if that speech or conduct were broadcast on television or radio, 1. For the first occurrence, the school shall suspend the person at a minimum for 1 week of employment, and the person shall not receive any compensation for the duration of the suspension. This paragraph does not prohibit a school after the first occurrence from suspending the person for a longer duration or terminating the employment of that person, period. Paragraph 2. For the second occurrence, the school shall suspend the person at a minimum for 2 weeks of employment, and the person shall not receive any compensation for the duration of the suspension. This paragraph does not prohibit a school after the second occurrence from suspending the person for a longer duration or terminating the employment of that person, paragraph, period, paragraph 3. For the third occurrence, the school shall terminate the employment of the person. This paragraph does not prohibit a school after the first or second occurrence from terminating the employment of that person, period, paragraph B. Where was the A? Oh, A's way up at the top. B, for the purposes of this section, public school means a public preschool program, a public elementary school, a public junior high school, a public middle school, a public high school, a public vocational education program, a public community college, or a public university in this state. To wit, Arizona. Period. I added the to wit, Arizona. You got that? You got that real good now? Oh, this is almost as good as back when, what was his name? Gerald, I mentioned him on the show the other night. Gerald Jerkoff in Alabama tried to ban all references to homosexuals in libraries funded by the state. First book would have had to go would have been the Bible. This is almost as good, or maybe better than that, because this one has a better chance of passing. Thanks to our good buddy Jeff Biggers, we already know that the teaching of The Tempest has been banned. You know, The Tempest by William Shakespeare has been banned in the state of in Arizona Stan. And now the right-wing thugs and intellectual knuckle walkers and mouth breathers are having a go at books in general. The reason I said that it might be good to get little Timmy and little Susie and little Janie and little Johnny out of the room is because this is internet-based radio, which allows me to say all kinds of fun things, because the FCC, the Federal Funky Communications Commission, has absolutely no say-so whatsoever over what goes on over the interweb tubes, because after all, it's a series of tubes, it's not a big truck. And I, Bob Kincaid, can say booger if I want to. I, Bob Kincaid, can say that the right-wing thugs and anti-intellectual goons of the Arizona Stan legislature, the pig-licking majority there, have about as much in their heads as a hog does in the ass when it comes to intelligence. I can say that because the FCC is not in control of me. However, for a bunch of right-wingers who, we believe in states' rights, it's what we believe in, they're going to subject an instructor in a public school, and instructor, could just as well mean janitor, anybody who draws a check on the in a public school, says booger, or bullshit, or any of the words that George Carlin so succinctly identified. These states' rights, anti-regulatory types, all of a sudden want to apply the standards that apply to over-the-air broadcasting, terrestrial broadcasting. They want to apply that to the public schools of Arizona.
Well, that's just as well. I wouldn't want no teacher telling my little shitheel kid he was a little shitheel. I mean, why, you wouldn't want to do that.
No, I'm not going to turn this into an opportunity just to swear gratuitously, even if I just did. This is just too darn much. If a person provides classroom instruction in a public school and engages in speech or conduct that would violate the standards adopted by the... So I guess that means that a teacher cannot have a Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction, although I can't imagine wanting to or trying to, because this is kind of interesting, because the standards enunciated by the Federal Communications Commission are strict liability offenses. It's not a matter of did you mean to. It's not a matter of was this intentional. It's a matter of did you do it? Yes, here's the fine. And it's somewhere around $275,000, a dirty word, if I recall correctly. And the individual stations that air it can pay $275,000 each, as can the individual who said it, as can the individual network that initially promulgated it. That's why there was so much of a hissy after the Super Bowl halftime show a week and a day ago over MIA and her obscene gesture. Because NBC, I mean, they ran out yesterday, I mean, in a dead hurry. Hey, this was not our broadcast. This was the NFL's. Everybody knows it was the NFL's. We're not responsible for this. We tried. We did what they could. But you know, trying to avoid that stupid $275,000 fine or upward thereof. And now the state of Arizona and the right-wing knuckle walkers and mouth breathers who run it want to impose content-based speech restrictions on teachers in everything from Head Start and preschool up to university professor, all the way to tenured university professor. This will be a problem. Because in essence, it is not the muzzling necessarily of professors so much as it is the muzzling of speech itself. I have here before me a couple of excerpts. One from J.D. Salinger's Catcher in the Rye. I mentioned Rye earlier here. Holden Caulfield's screed against the existential angst of being an adolescent in the, what, mid to late 40s. Here's a quote. "You can't ever find a place that's nice and peaceful, because there isn't any. You may think there is, but once you get there, when you're not looking, somebody will sneak up and write, 'Fuck you,' right under your nose." It's not off, you know, that language is not in that book because J.D. Salinger was trying to be titillating. It is an attempt to reference a certain level of reality. Another dose of reality from the Canterbury Tales. You know, "When not a pearly with a sure suit to the druth of March, it pairs it to the root, and by the doll, every vein and switch, the quarter which virtue engendered is, the floor of and zephyr seek with a sweet wreath after every hill." That one? I have to repeat that every time I say Canterbury Tales, because somewhere in the universe my mother's spirit smiles, because I was taught that from the cradle. When we got to the Canterbury Tales in high school, my English teacher was blown away that I knew the prologue. But somewhere in one of the Canterbury Tales, Geoffrey Chaucer wrote as follows: "For if a priest be foul in whom we trust, no wonder that a common man should rust. And shame it is to see, lest priests take stock, a shitten shepherd and a snowy flock." It extends all the way down to the dictionary itself. Merriam-Webster Dictionary. 1. Fuck. Verb. Pronounced fuck. Usually obscene. To engage in coitus with, sometimes used interjectionally, with an object, as a personal or reflexive pronoun to express anger, contempt, or disgust. Reading any one of those things would, as we have noted here, be grounds for a suspension for at a minimum of 1 week of employment and withholding of an individual's pay. For a week or more, and the school board or the whatever entity is not constrained from only making it a week and a week's pay. Reading this story, since I'm feeling gratuitous, put me in mind of this. Many of you have probably already heard it. I hope you will not be put off. And, oh, I can't believe it, Bob. Now, this is a piece of comedy. We like comedy around here. We like comedy around here, especially when it has overt redeeming social value, as does this. Understand, as you listen to this, that this is now illegal. Because remember, it's speech or conduct. Okay? So the teacher says, children, turn, or in the university, ladies and gentlemen, please turn in Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse 5 to whatever, and we will discuss the relationship between Billy Pilgrim and Montana Wild Hack. That is conduct, and that could get the professor suspended. If it happens three times, terminated, especially if there's some little right-wing turd sitting in the back taking notes. But yes, this would be quite illegal in the state of Arizona.
Perhaps one of the most interesting words in the English language today is the word fuck. Out of all of the English words that begin with the letter F, fuck is the only word that is referred to as the F word. It's the one magical word. Just by its sound can describe pain, pleasure, hate, and love. Fuck, as most words in the English language, is derived from German, the word fricken, which means to strike. In English, fuck falls into many grammatical categories, as a transitive verb, for instance. John fucked Shirley. As an intransitive verb, Shirley fucks. Its meaning is not always sexual. It can be used as an adjective, such as John's doing all the fucking work. As part of an adverb, Shirley talks too fucking much. As an adverb enhancing an adjective, Shirley is fucking beautiful. As a noun, I don't give a fuck. As part of a word, abso-fucking-lutely, or in-fucking-credible. And, as almost every word in a sentence, fuck the fucking fuckers. As you must realize, there aren't too many words with the versatility of fuck, as in these examples describing situations such as fraud, I got fucked at the used car lot, dismay, aw, fuck it, trouble, I guess I'm really fucked now, aggression, don't fuck with me, buddy. Difficulty. I don't understand this fucking question. Inquiry. Who the fuck was that? Dissatisfaction. I don't like what the fuck is going on here. Incompetence. He's a fuck off. Dismissal. Why don't you go outside and play hide and go fuck yourself? I'm sure you can think of many more examples. With all of these multi-purpose applications, how can anyone be offended when you use the word? We say, use this unique, flexible word more often in your daily speech. It will identify the quality of your character immediately. Say it loudly and proudly. Fuck you!
yes, to the state of Arizona and its oddball, prudent, or not prudent, but the what's the, see, I'm all, yeah, to the Arizona legislature. Jim noting, expletives and obliteratives. Are they going to eliminate the last words of Captain Butler in Gone with the Wind? I thought obscene was defined by the Supreme Court as appealing to the prurient interest of a deviant group. I do not understand, not to mention Cheney's F-bomb in the well of the House. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. And Ray is off and running. No, but seriously, let's say you're in political science 302 at the University of Arizona or Arizona State or any of the other higher institution public edifices that exist in that state, and there is a discussion of proper versus improper conduct in the deliberative bodies of the legislative branch of the United States government. Under this law, a professor could not pass, not only could the professor not say what Dick Cheney said to Senator Pat Leahy in the Senate of the United States, that professor could not pass around a handout with examples of proper and improper conduct if the word was that Dick Cheney used to Senator Leahy, in other words, go fuck yourself, appeared on that page. Now, I can't, at lest this turn into something about the F word, there's a whole lot of other words that are out. And some are marginal on terrestrial broadcasting. There are open questions as to what you can say and when you can say it. Now, all bets are off on satellite, on the internet, on cable, because of a lack of FCC jurisdiction. The Arizona legislature, however, would like to take the communications in Federal Communications Commission and apply it, apparently, to some of the most protected speech that the First Amendment has to offer. This statute falls under the heading of, a couple of different analytical areas of First Amendment protection. One is time, place, and manner restrictions, in which the court would try to determine whether or not the Arizona legislature has improperly intruded into the time into free speech rights in terms of the time, the place, and the manner of the restriction. This also serves, however, as something that is particularly odious to within the body of law regarding the First Amendment to the United States and free speech. The court has a pronounced distaste for things called prior restraints. Now, I know, whenever we say restraint around a right-winger, they start thinking about spiky dog collars and ermine-lined handcuffs and gimp masks and all those things they love so well, but, you know, just kind of have to, well, keep them out of sight of the rest of the world. But no, a prior restraint really is an odious thing, because that's the government saying that you can't say things before you've even said them, and thereby serving a huge chilling effect on any notion of free speech. And I think the thing that Jim's having a hard time getting his head around is the fact that the FCC regulations are not the same as the First Amendment. The FCC regulations have been challenged periodically. One of them was Pacifica Radio for having run George Carlin's dirty words that you can't say on TV. A case they lost, by the way, and for which they were fined. Versus what you can and cannot say, generally speaking. there are reasons to have the ability to refer to texts that have questionable language because, well, human beings writ large use questionable language. Even vice presidents of the United States, or let's see, how about Richard Nixon? God damn it, Henry, they just don't understand me. It's the Jews, Henry. God damn it, it's the Jews. Right? I mean, the president of the United States. Or the president of, let's see, well, wait, here's another example. If you were describing the run-up to George Bush's war against the people of Iraq, you could not quote the president of the United States upon inquiry being made of him about Saddam Hussein prior to March 2003, and this was taken down by a real live honest-to-goodness journalist, and of course he couldn't print it in his real live honest-to-goodness journalist magazine because, well, American little eyeballs are too delicate to read such things, and of course they were busy covering up and doing stenography for George W. Bush and made it wanted to seem as though he wouldn't say shit if he had a mouthful. But you must remember that upon being inquired in a cabinet meeting, "But sir, what about Saddam Hussein?" George W. Bush, President of the United States, responded, "Fuck Saddam, we're going to take him out." You couldn't teach about that in any public educational institution in the state of Arizona. This is bizarre because pay close attention to the language banning the conduct. If a person who provides classroom instruction in a public school, because so far I've said, you know, you couldn't include it on a handout because that's conduct, and you couldn't read it out loud because that's speech in the classroom. What about outside the classroom? Well, let's read the language of the law. If a person who provides classroom instruction in a public school engages in speech or conduct that would violate the standards adopted by the Federal Communications Commission concerning obscenity, indecency, and profanity, if that speech or conduct were broadcast on television or radio, you notice what's missing there? And I was making an unfounded assumption. I just kind of made an ass of myself. Because your first inclination is to say, "Well, yeah, I don't want them playing Red Fox tapes to my first grader or nothing." Okay. I mean, I don't want George Carlin being played to. I mean, you know, hell, when they're adolescents and the hormones are just getting going, everything's dirty to a junior high school student. Last thing in the world they need to hear is a George Carlin routine. Right? Because, you know, school's just the wrong place for that. At least theoretically within the scope of this discussion. But that is not what this statute says. If a person who provides classroom instruction in a public school engages in speech or conduct that would violate the standards adopted by the Federal Communications Commission concerning blah, 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 for the first occurrence, the school shall suspend the person. For the second occurrence, the school shall suspend the person. For the third occurrence, the school shall terminate the employment of the person. And then paragraph B defines what public school means. What's missing? I mean, this isn't even a time, place, or manner statute like I had mentioned a couple of minutes ago. Not in the least. This is a wholesale ban. It is a wholesale ban on employees of public educational entities ever using a word that is deemed, what's that again? Obscene, indecent, or profane. Now, Mrs. Krabappel, those of you who watch The Simpsons will know, Mrs. Krabappel is a lovely individual, Mrs. Smith, Mrs. Jones, Mr. Jones, doesn't matter, is a wonderful, wonderful teacher of your children's preschool. And Mr. and Mrs. Jones have gone to dinner. And they're sitting in a nice little restaurant somewhere when a passing waiter trips and spills, oh, what, a glass of wine down Mrs. Jones or Mr. Jones's shirt front. Or maybe a hot plate of beef bourguignon right in the lap. Maybe it's nice garlicky shrimp scampi. Whatever the food in question, whatever the substance, it is surprising and shocking. And Mr. or Mrs. Jones, or perhaps both of them, maybe it was a really inept waiter, they yell out some expletive. Pick one. There probably would be several. In the case of that filthy one percenter who blessed out a waiter and broke his finger in Florida. We talked about that a few weeks ago. There were some choice words involved. Well, guess what can happen under this statute to Mr. or Mrs. Jones' dedicated educators gone out to dinner? If it's the first time, they can be suspended for a week. If it's the second time, they can be suspended, or they can just be fired. Because there is not a bit of language in that statute about the language complained of occurring in or around a classroom situation. So your precious little lumpkin who just loves Ms. Jones or Mr. Jones, and you've never had a complaint about them and the way that they are dealing with your precious pumpkin, well, a little darling may show up for school on Monday to find that Mr. or Mrs. Jones are absent and there's a substitute teacher in there for the next week because they said a dirty word and the school board heard about it and had no choice. Because paragraphs 1, 2, and 3, for the first occurrence, the school shall suspend. For the second occurrence, the school shall suspend. For the third occurrence, the school shall terminate the employment. This is fascism. Pure and simple. Now, I'm sure that the fine, upstanding Christians in Arizona, you know, that's what we don't need none of them books with dirty words. But you know what? Any one of those fine, upstandings stub their toe or hit their thumb with a hammer, I'm guaranteeing you they're not hollering out, "Maranatha, bless Jesus." They're probably, to quote Gene Shepherd from A Christmas Story, putting words, using words that are probably still circling the earth at some level of the atmosphere. Our dear friend Jude noting, with the word fuck, Bob, it feels so releasing when stated, so target on, so clearing for the enclosed amount of negative energy that the human vessel is having to contain. Could it be that the base chakra is opened up wide with the tone, energy, and frequency of this word, when it's verbalized to the universal energy. It's like a clearinghouse for what needs to be exercised from us, who are simply human beings. I know you realize, Bob, that the base chakra is one of survival, and we are in the midst of seeking to survive so many fucking injustices. Jim, you're absolutely right. I guess if General Patton were alive, he couldn't be invited as a guest speaker, could he? No, he could not. And what's more, he would be fired from any school, any public educational institution in the state of Arizona. David in Tennessee noted, maybe, just maybe. On a given day in third period English, the teacher will stand and declare, today this is a discussion group. This is not public instruction. If you want to do so, you may opt for study hall today. Then get the ACLU involved. Possible. But that's conduct. This thing's a law. And again, yes, that's right. Of course, the ACLU will be involved, hopefully, before this thing can ever, before old hatchet-faced Jan Brewer's signature on it is dry. Because it is that odious. I'm sure, you know, the right wing, this is another manifestation of the fact that the right wing wants to live in Leave It to Beaver world. Ward, don't you think you were a little hard on the beaver last night? You know, where Ward and June never say a dirty word, and Eddie Haskell is creepy not because of his verbiage, but because he's just so smarmy and... I think Eddie Haskell grew up and became a serial killer. I don't think there's any real question about that. So... You know, when I saw this over at Think Progress, the first thing I saw, you know, they headlined it, Arizona bill would likely prohibit teachers and professors from teaching any book with profanity. And that's true. But it's only when you step back and stop allowing yourself to make basic assumptions about what a right winger really means that you realize, holy crap, Batman! This thing's really broad. Of course, I'm sure that Slaughterhouse-5 is banned in every county in Arizona, Stan, because, well, even if there weren't any fun words in it, it would be an anti-war book. And right-wingers can't stand things that criticize the slaughtering of other human beings. But the Canterbury Tales? The Dictionary? Shakespeare? Shakespeare was really sly. Sometimes he spelled the words. There's one particularly noteworthy passage where the character is reading a woman's handwriting and praises her handwriting all the while spelling out a really odious word. And don't think for a minute that even if the groundlings down there in the pit who couldn't read nor write didn't get it, they came for the slapstick, and there was always some. That the folks who were in the paid seats, don't think that wasn't the funniest stuff in there. Hey, did you hear what he just did? I say, did he just spell what I thought he spelt? This Arizona is a little laboratory for all the hateful right-wingery, all the fascism that the right wing hath planned for us in our own good time. Because they're just trying to create a safe space for our children to learn things in. Right. So, nomination number one, the Arizona legislature. I'd love to have a little bit more detail on it, but and perhaps at some point we will. It'll be interesting to follow this story. Just to see if people pick this up. The fact that it's broader than it appears to be. But you know, it's that regulation outside the classroom part that really gets under my skin. Because we're seeing it here as well, in a different form. You all remember the Upper Big Branch disaster, in which the boundless greed of a gang of thugs led by Don Blankenship resulted in the deaths of 29 coal miners 2 years ago this April. You all remember that. And you know that ever since then, it has been there's been a desperate attempt on to make underground coal mines safer for the people who go in them. Even if coal mining itself leads to the toxification of our air and our water, even if the burning of coal brings the guys who and women who go in and dig it out, they don't think about that. Because what they're doing is dangerous enough as it is. But we know now that greed was the cause of the disaster at the Upper Big Branch mine. But good luck telling that to the governor of the state of West Virginia, Earl Ray Tumblin, who introduced his own law to deal with mine safety. And which law, curiously, had damned little to do with holding coal companies accountable for their greedy, filthy, greedy ways. I would go ahead and nominate Earl Ray Tomlin for more on More and Monday, but Jesus, you know, he's a past master. I mean, this guy's so damn dumb he couldn't pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel, okay? I guess that's another one. I reckon I'm never going to be no teacher in Arizona. But Earl Ray introduced his mine safety law, and guess what it had? Guess what the heart and soul of Earl Ray's mine safety law is? Drug testing for miners. Now, bear in mind, in all the investigation that was done on the Upper Big Branch disaster, there has never been one iota of evidence brought forth to suggest that even a remote cause of the Upper Big Branch disaster was some miner torching a crack pipe sitting on the man trip. No! There's absolutely no toxicology to suggest that any of the miners killed at Upper Big Branch had any kind of illegal or improper substances in their systems. But Earl Ray wants to make our mines safer by drug testing the miners. Huh? And of course, this is nothing more than a shameless little bowing, scraping capitulation to the coal industry because the coal industry doesn't want to actually deal with the fact that it is still in the business of killing the people who make its profits for it. But it goes deeper than that still. And this is where the Arizona story and the Earl Ray Tomlin mine safety bill story converge. The Arizona legislature wants to control the conduct of school employees, public education employees, from Head Start to tenured college professor, every instant of every day, whether they are in the classroom or not. This is a growing trend in what was once a great country. Workers, we talked about retrograde motion the other day. Yeah, here's some too. Workers have no rights outside the workplace, let alone in it. It is a constant assault on the right of working people to simply be people not defined other than by their work. What do I mean? Well, let's take these coal miners. Now, if you sit at a bar and have a few beers, or one beer, you can be tested, and the presence of that alcohol, which has the potential to make you unsafe because it alters your ability to function, because that's what alcohol is supposed to do, and it will show up as a concentration in your blood, breath, or urine. In most, if not all, states, the limit for operating a motor vehicle is 0.08, down from 0.10. And that can be any number of beers, depending on the size a person is, the nature of their metabolism, what have you. So, you could conceivably test the blood, breath, or urine of a miner going into the mine, and if they don't test positive for alcohol, they can go to work, because alcohol is easily discoverable in the blood, breath, or urine. On the other hand, let's say that Jim Bob, the coal miner, took his family down to the Dollywood 3 weeks ago on vacation. Now, he was out of the state of West Virginia, and there wasn't nobody looking. And he went out and got a little wild on Saturday night, and there was somebody outside the bar smoking one of them funny cigarettes, and he took a couple of hits, and he felt all funny. He never got behind the wheel. He got a little hungry. And when vacation was over, he went back, and he was and sometime inside of 28 days, he was tested. And guess what? His test showed up positive for the presence of tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, the active ingredient in marijuana. There is no evidence whatsoever to suggest that coal miner Jim Bob was in any wise impaired in his ability to do his job. But in Earl Ray Tomlin world, he can be fired for what he did on his own time and outside the scope of his employment with no indication whatsoever that his employment was impacted. On the other hand, however, coal miner Jim Bob can do a hit of acid and go into the mine, and if they pee test him, get his breath and his urine before going in there, it's never going to show up, and he can trip his ass off down in the tunnels. I didn't bother to tell him about the bats. Poor bastard would see him soon enough as it was. But none of that would show up in a drug test. And everything in between shows or doesn't show. Would mushrooms show up? Psilocybin? Probably not. Caffeine? What if he's just a jangled mess from too many half-calf, double-calf, double-shot mocha lattes? Is there any indication that that would have... Because you know what? You can make mistakes that way. Speed kills. And even caffeine is a form of speed. But the point is that these things, whether it be what a first-grade teacher says if she hits her thumb with a hammer and she's not in the schoolroom, to what coal miner Jim Bob does when he goes down to Dollywood, down to Pigeon Forge, and that ain't all that's it. Dollywood ain't all that's there. There's lots of sinful stuff you can get into in Pigeon Forge. These are attempts by the overarching ruling class.
Oh, there you go, bringing claws into it again.
To control not just the work hours, but the rest of the lives of working people. It is, in fact, an attempt to own working people, lock, stock, and barrel for the entirety of their existences in exchange for a rate of pay that is, for all intents and purposes, a pittance. If you want to control what I do in my time off, you'd better, by God, be cutting me a check. But do American working people have the stones to stand up and say that? No. Mostly not. Some organized labor groups do, mostly not. I can only hope that the Arizona Education Association or the American Federation of Teachers or whomever represents teachers in Arizona stand will stand up and say, the minute this thing gets autographed by Governor Hatchetface, we're suing. And remember, anybody can look at this. I mean, I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on the radio. But you just look at the statute and go, Jesus Christ, this controls everything that people are doing on or off the job. What they say, when they say it, and how they say it. How could that not be lawsuit fodder? But these are right. We got conservative. We don't want, and we got to cut the spending. But these stupid, benighted, ignorant, pug, dumb bastards might well report this out of that legislature for signature by old Hatchetface, knowing full well that it's going to be probably $500,000 worth of litigation by the time they're done defending it. And defend it they will. Because they're conservatives. Goddamn morons is what they are. Ray notes, I'm reminded of Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now saying that troops couldn't write fuck on their helicopters because it was obscene. Yeah. Robert in Australia notes, so, no French Connection United Kingdom stores then? He says, hi Bob, you can walk through most malls in Australia and see a French Connection United Kingdom store, FCUK. And generally you see the name of the store written as above. Some people were upset at first. Now no one cares. Do you have them in the U.S.? No, I've never heard of those. We need several in Arizona, I can tell you. Because that's one of those beautiful things about language. The people who study cognition and the way the human brain works have recently found out, and you see this passed around in little internet funnies, that the nature of the mind is such that we recognize words and not letters. That's why when you're teaching a child to read, it's better to teach the child words and not letters. And as long as the first letter and the last letter are in the right place, we'll sort out what's supposed to be in the middle automatically and just read on past it. Isn't the mind just a fascinating thing? Yeah, it is. This thing is fraught with peril. But the greatest peril is, of course, the prior restraint. And prior restraint is another and fancier way of saying self-censorship, because that is what these right-wing bastards want. They want us... This is an attempt to instill fear into people about how they speak. Sure, they won't be... They might as well go ahead and have a book burning in Arizona for as fascist as they've gone. Time out. God, you can feel it coming, and it's just, you gotta wait. Usually they happen in threes. But that's what this is always all about. Right-wingers fear ideas. Conservatives fear ideas. They fear the future. And so, if they can get us to where we're worried about every word we say, well, that's a lot less time we've spent saying and more time we've spent worrying, isn't it? How does that line up with any concept of democracy or freedom or equality you might have? Yeah, me either. Kim, top 31 things that you will never hear a Southern boy say. When I retire, I'm moving up north. Oh, I just couldn't. She's only 16. I'll take Shakespeare for 1,000, Alex. Now, come on. This is just anti-Southern bigotry, Kim. Duct tape won't fix that. The number one thing you will never hear a Southern boy say, nope, no more beer for me. I'm driving a whole busload of us down to reelect Obama. Oh, mercy. Ray noting, drug test the people he's killing. That's obscene. Talking about Earl Ray Tomlin. Ron and Raleigh noting, this is Arizona is basically, he says, what you have here is a verbal three strikes law. Say this behavior takes place over a 20-year teaching career. You could still find yourself out on your ass. Oops, I said ass. P.S. The actor that played Eddie Haskell became a cop. Well, am I not surprised? Perfect fit. Now, have a nice day. Oh, says David in Tennessee. Rats. French Connection USA. French Connection USA. Yeah, apparently it has gotten or is getting. Yep, it's here. South Beach, Florida, New Orleans, Boston, Mass., Las Vegas, Nevada, New York, New York, Houston, Texas. Well, just what in the hell do they sell? Well, ugly clothing. Okay. But then again, I look at most fashion and I say, well, ugly clothing. So that's where we begin with our Friday on the front porch. I think, by the way, we had some phone troubles. We had some phone troubles on Friday getting the new system in, but we may have it licked. I do need to let you know we don't have toll-free service back yet, but we're working on it. So for now, the dial-in number is just the direct dial number, 304-658-3333. And email comes in, as usual, to Bob Kincaid, bobkincaid@gmail.com. I'm sitting here trying to think of I mentioned Friday night that my head writer, David in Tennessee, had taken the night off to go and see the Drive-By Truckers play in Nash, Vegas. I got a report back from David that it was a magnificent show, that they are in top form. So if they're coming somewhere near you, you might want to see this tour because they are they're kicking it, putting on a great show. Let's see. And I mentioned the Drive-By Truckers because, bless their hearts, they're always good for a word that you can't say on the radio. Yeah, there's a favorite of mine, and I think this might have one. And even if it doesn't, I love the song anyway. We'll take a little break and come back. This is More In Monday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Life ain't nothing but a blending of all.
I love that song. From the Dirty South, the Drive-By Truckers, Carl Perkins, Cadillac. The one song when I was looking for him to drop an S-bomb or an F-bomb and I couldn't get one. Confound it. But you know what? Let's have a little DJ moment on More In Monday. If I've been thinking, back when, because I know there's one in this one, I just want to make sure that we get the proper middle finger up in the air to all those right-wing jackasses in Arizona. I got an email here from a resident thereof. Kathy from Kingman said, Arizona sucks. Isn't it hard to believe, Bob, that Arizona actually had a Mexican-born governor in the mid-1970s, Raul Castro? We can only speculate how the state changed so much. My personal theory is that right-wingers from Orange County, California, moved over here in large numbers. These Orange County conservatives may be the crackers that came out from Oklahoma and similar places after they ruined the soil by not practicing good farming techniques in the 1930s. I want to move to California, needless to say, Kathy in Kingman. You know, it's funny because Agnes and I have these discussions from time to time because, well, first of all, you guys periodically engender them because I'll tell you, I tell you some horror story about life in Appalachia with mountaintop removal. And I'll get these emails saying, Bob, why don't you move? And we've had this discussion. But Agnes and I have one every now and then. You know, she says, Bob, I'd like to get out of here. And then we have the discussion about, yeah, how? You know, the Kincaids reenacting the Grapes of Wrath, Kincaids as Jodes, even though I've got a family name, Goad, just one consonant consonant away from Jode. It's not my idea of a good time. But I asked her, I said, you know, Agnes, where do you want to go? You want to go to Alabamistan? I mean, we could. I mean, that's you know, I did grow up there to Appalachian, West Virginian parents, but, you know, my first 18 years of life were spent in Alabamistan, and there's a lot to recommend it. But it is a brutal damn place, especially now. Want to go to Georgia? You know, tune in Malloy any given night, and he can tell you what it's like in Georgia. You couldn't pay me to move to South Carolina, nor North Carolina. I could contemplate Tennessee. I could possibly be talked into Wisconsin if I had somewhere to go when the snow flew. I could be talked into the Great Northwest if I had somewhere to go when the rain fell. Arizona would be delightful, but it's been absolutely ruined by a bunch of right-wing horses' rear ends. And that's the problem. Ultimately, that's what I said to Agnes. You know, you say, I want to get out of here. I said, well, you're not getting out of here unless by out of here you mean getting out of the United States. Because this entire country is being absolutely, from the ground up, toenails to hair follicles, ruined by the right wing. So, you know, Kathy, I understand what you say about Arizona, but it ain't just Arizona. By the way, David in Tennessee notes, for the Drive-By Truckers fanciers, Mike Cooley sang the hell out of that song last Friday, Carl Perkins Cadillac. He said, believe it or not, I was in Patterson's living room when in the midst of rehearsal, Mike Cooley said, I finished Carl Perkins. Tell me what y'all think. Being 5 feet away, when Cooley brought one to the band for the up-down confab, buckled my knees. And yes, the band all loved the tune. David says they're doing some more U.S. dates and then going to the EU for 5 weeks. Holy cow! EU listeners, UK listeners, go to the Drive-By Truckers website. Find out when they're going to be near you. You have not been to a show until you've been to a trucker show. So a few more U.S. dates, then EU for 5 weeks. David says then they're holing up to mostly record the next CD. Expect a two-month hole in the summer and the fall. I wish I was going to be near somewhere that they were going to be playing. I would love to see him again. I only see him once. That's a crime. And I saw him in an auditorium with crappy acoustics. Now I was thinking that okay, I got one more tune for you. Or maybe, I don't know. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Isn't this? Let me check. No, that's not it. Dadgummit, what am I thinking about? Oh, there it is.
Mary Alice had a baby, and he looked just like I did. We got married on a Monday, and I've been working ever since. Every week down at the Ford plant, and now they're shutting down. Godwin Reagan's in the White House, nobody gives a damn. Double-digit unemployment, TVA be shutting soon. While over there in Huntsville, putting people on the moon. So I took to run the numbers for this man I used to know. And I sell a few narcotics, and I sell a little blow. I'm getting rich now, but I'm getting more than fine. It's tough to make a living, but a man's just gotta try. If I die, you call the county, will it make the evening news? But you lose a blow of rockets, and you keep
apparently I'm channeling my profound wish that I'd been in Nashville last Friday night, because David tells me Patterson opened the show with a blistering rendition of this. 900 people were immediately on board and ready for the rock show. David says over 2.5 hours they modulated it down twice, only to crescendo again, and then there was an 18-minute encore. Says David, them truckers, they ain't ever fucking around once on the stage. And they don't. And that's, and I was gonna say, you know, I'm guessing Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, and his lovely wife Ballistic have never heard putting people on the moon. Or he wouldn't say goofy crap like he says. Yeah, he would. He's a hateful piece of shit. Here, maybe I've cleared it from my system. I've got something else to play for you, but I want to make sure that everybody's dinner's down and settled before I do that, because it ain't no fun. Let's get moving. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
Oh, well, you've gotten off to a good start tonight, that's for sure.
Things like this Arizona business, Jim, just, they stymie me.
Well, my question is simply this. Don't they have anything better else to address?
Well, I mean, they're recrafting their Sharia law bill since Oklahoma's got knocked down. And they've got their SB 1070 hating on the immigrants on. I don't know, maybe they could do a flag burning bill or a Pledge of Allegiance bill or an Under God bill, but I guess this was just next on the list.
Well, excuse me, but as Hercule Poirot would say, my little gray cells aren't working too well tonight, but I can't wrap my head around why they would concern themselves with something like this when there are so many other important issues at hand.
I would love to know the backstory on this, Jim. Is this a law that has been drafted and offered up because some irate parent said, you know, Mrs. Schmidlkoff said poopy today in front of my first graders, and I don't mean she said poopy. Is that what this is? Or is it something more insidious, Jim? And what I mean by that, let me just maybe phrase the question a little better.
Actually, what you're going to say.
Is this bill drafted as inartfully as it appears to be, or is this deliberately drafted the way it is to own a teacher's conduct every second of every day?
I would think the latter. You know, once they get that door open like this, they can just flood it with all types of restrictions against any type of freedom that a person in public academia would have.
Well, I think you and I are of a single mind on this, Jim, because fascists don't make mistakes in what they offer up legislatively, do they?
Not really, no. I mean, what these people want to do is to completely open the door to a way to invade upon free speech of any kind. I mean, you said that even what the person in question said, either in and out of the classroom, would be subject to punishment.
Well, up to and including termination. You know, it's not.
I mean, I just wonder how they intended to enforce something like this. I mean, what if a student said it? And, you know, I mean, are they going to invade that too?
Well, students have no rights in the first place. Remember, and it's kind of a silly example, I guess, but it is a profound one. The Supreme Court has already opined on students' rights to free speech. And children's rights to free speech are severely curtailed because they are children. But in that one particular case, remember, there were students who were protesting something. They weren't even in the school. I don't remember the case, Jim, but I'm sure you'll remember the circumstances. They weren't on school grounds. They weren't in the school. They weren't anywhere near the school. It wasn't a school function. And they unfurled a banner that said, Bong Hits for Jesus. Now that is it's a totally nonsensical phrase. It has no meaning whatsoever. The kids were suspended from school for it. They sued, and they lost, with the Supreme Court of the United States, if I recall correctly, ruling that a student does not have any free speech rights.
Wow. I can remember when I was a school teacher, as part of my career, I heard lots of expletives and obliteratives. And when I heard them, I just simply basically said, well, let's move on.
Well, I mean, I guess they deal with it as best they can.
Admonish them from using words like that in the classroom. I mean, if they were, you know, really ugly or dirty. But, I mean, who's to determine? I mean, what's the benchmark here? And what are the words that these people are addressing? I mean, which words? Damn, hell, shit, fuck?
Well, as defined within the legislation, it is anything deemed obscene, profane, or indecent as defined not by the Supreme Court of the United States, but by the Federal Communications Commission broadcast standards, which is an entirely narrower definition than anything that the Supreme Court would offer.
Well, let me ask you this. How, if these laws are so strict about this, how can they play a film like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Well, the short answer is they can't.
But they do.
Well, not on an over-the-air broadcast channel uncensored.
But on cable.
Sure. Because cable is not broadcast per se, because it's not being sent out via an antenna and received by one.
Well, you know, I have noticed a lot lately that certain movies, even on cable, that they are bleeping out stuff.
Yeah.
For example, like in Full Metal Jacket. Okay. What are you going to do to people like Arlie Ermey, who played that drill instructor on the island so well?
Well, you bleep him. And a lot of that is self-policing by the cable broadcasters, because they don't want to give Congress an opportunity to extend the right to censor cable to the FCC's jurisdiction. Now, I mean, for instance, if you tune in to The Daily Show, they are forever bleeping out F words and S words and so forth. Because of the time of day that The Daily Show runs. In other words, it runs during so-called family viewing hours. That's another one of those little monstrosities. If there's a possibility that little Timmy and little Cindy are sitting there while Mommy and Daddy are watching The Daily Show, never mind the demographics of who watches The Daily Show, there's this sense that little Timmy and Cindy should not hear broadcast words that they probably hear Mommy and Daddy using all the time.
Well, if they can, you know, redact or anything in print or eliminate or bleep out what is spoken verbally, to me that's just the first step of them being able to control speech. And once you control speech, you control action.
Conduct.
Mobility. You basically go back to some type of totalitarian society in which anything which they deem inappropriate can, if they can take away your job, even if you have tenure, well, they can take away your freedom. They can take away your family. They can take away your home. They can take away anything they want to, right?
Yes. And I think the walk away on this instance in Arizona is not only can they want to.
Yeah, I think they do, probably. I mean, I've never been a prude or anything like that. I think you know that from your historical experience with me in my call to the show. And I've said some things on here that are pretty provocative, but I've just told the truth.
And you do not offer them for their, and again, this is critical to any analysis here, you don't offer it for its prurient value.
No, everything from what I've said about having a bomb with an electric motor to it yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. And there was a time when I would have given anything, but never mind.
Go ahead, say it.
No, there was a time when I would have, behold the coelacanth, or the holy grail or whatever. I would have been tickled pink.
I normally don't resort to words like that except when I'm provoked, but if somebody else does, hey, knock yourself out.
Yeah. Well, sometimes language is color. I mean, can you imagine, for instance, reading the redacted and cleaned up version of Catcher in the Rye, Jim? Because I know you've read the book.
Yeah, I have. Would they eliminate Edgar Marsala when he cut the tremendous Spartan chapel?
If it's deemed obscene?
Well, yeah, I'm sure they would probably think that farting is obscene.
Yeah.
I mean, even Queen Elizabeth farts.
I mean, you certainly couldn't show the campfire scene from Blazing Saddles to a group of 12th graders, could you? Or you couldn't even show it as an example of slapstick comedy to Film Appreciation 401 at the University of Arizona.
Or as an example of lack of compassion for black people or Chinese people.
Yeah.
Or any of the other things that I think Mel Brooks was trying to convey with that movie. You know?
Right. But of course, it's, as I mentioned at the very beginning of the story, Jim, it's par for the course. It is just all in a day's work for a state that recently banned teachers from being able to teach Shakespeare's The Tempest.
I remember that. And I don't understand that very well either. I simply can't wrap my head around things like that. I mean, what are they going to do next? Are they going to send down a directive from the Pentagon saying that drill instructors can't use naughty words?
Well, I'll give you an even better example. David in Tennessee was writing just a couple of minutes ago. He said, uh-oh, because, you know, Arizona loves them for some football, right?
Yeah, I guess they do.
He said, Bob, would coaching football out on the high school football field be considered considered public instruction? Darn tootin' it would.
Of course it would. And you know those coaches sometimes, so they get heated up. No, they don't have to get heated up. I'm sure they probably use some...
GD, it's son, when I tell you to go through and hit that linebacker, I don't mean for you to effing dance with him.
Well, exactly. In the military, when they're teaching people how to fight and stuff like that and how to basically convey a message to a bunch of green recruits, the gravity of the job that they're about to undertake, they're going to use words like that because I've known all these old salts in my career. And I know that's the way they talk. It's not necessarily the way I talk, but right now I feel the need to do so.
And understandably so. There are places where language that you would use at the sewing circle is not language appropriate to the situation.
I mean, my God, I mean, whether it's a contest on the gridiron or whether it's a contest on the battlefield or whether it's a conveyance of language that was written by, you know, recognized authors, I mean, it is a garden party. I mean, we're not sitting here with our little fingers over a cup of tea in 1907. I mean, what do they want? To bring back some type of Hayes office? You know, he was called in to clean up Hollywood back in the 30s or whatever, and everybody had to be in two beds, and they couldn't have the kisses that were so long in duration, you remember what the Hayes office was designed to do.
Yeah. Well, remember the phrasing of this statute. Engages in speech or conduct that would violate the standards adopted by concerning obscenity, indecency, and profanity.
Well, they could take that as directly spoken or implied. For example, and I'll go back to...
Well, Janet Jackson.
Well, what about Mae West?
Sure.
What about her? I mean, good Lord in heaven. I mean, they were... old William Randolph Hearst was after her for years and years and years because of some comment that she had made about his sugar britches marrying Davies. And Hearst and his papers would try to ban all her movies and would make publicly written in those papers, it's time that Congress did something about Mae West. When William Randolph Hearst, you know what kind of life he lived and what he did. For example, he killed a man on board his yacht, William Inge, the father of the American Western, because he thought Marion Davies was having an affair with Charlie Chaplin. But nonetheless, that was behind Mae West making a comment about Marion Davies not really being a serious actress but a comedian, and it got old Droopy Drawers Hearst got his panties in a wad. You know, I don't understand what gets into these people. I just don't understand it. While they have so little time in their own lives when they have to legislate morality upon others, and that's the purpose of this call, is the legislation of morality. You simply can't do it. They tried it with prohibition. They tried it with all types of other things to control behavior. And when I see behavior being controlled, I think about Hitler and Stalin and other people like that in history who have been so vilified. But I guess they're going to try to rehabilitate some of them, aren't they?
I don't think you're off base in suggesting it, Jim.
Well, my mind just whirls around a little bit when I hear stuff like this, and maybe I'm not on the market, but I've never made a definite comment about always being on the mark, because I realize I'm not. But I know what I think, I know how to respond to what I hear, and this just simply isn't good. I mean, these people are opening a door. And once you open that door, once you get that crack and open that, you can get all types of stuff. It's like opening Pandora's box, and that's what I'm trying to say. These people are opening a Pandora's box in which the victims of those horrible things that get out are the people who should be able to speak as they want to. Now, I'm not advocating any teacher getting in there saying all kinds of nasty blue words and stuff like that. But as far as literature and as far as theater and as far as other means of self-expression, for example, music like you just played, I mean, these are people expressing their concern, they're expressing their condemnation and their frustration, and they're pouring their hearts out as far as the evil things that have been done to them are concerned.
Yeah, you know, our buddy Ray just wrote in. He said, we talk about indecency, we talk about obscenity, we talk about, right. And he says, yet wall-to-wall violence is fine. That says a lot about us. And televangelists stealing from the old and feeble in the name of God, that's fine too. You know, I guess that's why, who was it, Potter Stewart, who said, I can't tell you what obscenity is, but I know it when I see it. And naturally, the miserable fascists in Arizona couldn't reference any Supreme Court rulings, so that's why they opted for the much broader or narrower, depending on how you look at it, definition as promulgated by the FCC. Now, there's, as always, there's more to the story than meets the eye, Jim. This thing was, of course, introduced by a bunch of right-wing hacks. Or maybe not hacks. They're out-and-out fascists. But one of them, one of the five sponsors, is State Senator Lori Klein. She's a Republican from Arizona. And last summer, according to the report that I'm looking at, she scared the piss out of some people because during an interview with a reporter from the Arizona Republic, she pulled out a loaded handgun and pointed it at the reporter's chest.
Well, Bob, that's an obscene gesture if ever I heard one.
Ta-da!
And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think that at least 75% of their agenda on the right wing and these people who want to just basically strip people who are less than their betters of their rights and things like that. I think their whole agenda is obscene. It is to me. It's a lot more obscene than saying damn or shit or fuck or hell. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, those words don't hurt anybody. But the actions of some of these people who, for whatever reason, whether it's to gain a vote or whether it's to respond to some type of droopy drawer's complaint about some parent who probably has some serious problems at home in the first place, I think, well, I mean, what could be more obscene and defamatory to human beings than their own agenda and their own actions to pursue it?
Well,
I mean, that's my question.
Well, I think it was Friday when our dear friend Jude in Washington State pointed out that I forget what the conduct or the conversation was. I'm still a little goofy from this head cold. But she pointed out one of the defining characteristics of fascism in that context, and it caused me to just go and have a quick look at that list again. And number 11 on the 14 defining characteristics of fascism, number 11 is disdain for intellectuals and the arts. Fascist nations tend to promote and tolerate open hostility to higher education and academia. It is not uncommon for professors and other academics to be censored or even arrested. Free expression in the arts and letters is openly attacked.
And where did that happen in Germany, for example?
Sure. But it also happened in Chile. It also happened in Argentina. It happened in Spain. It happened in Italy. It's happened everywhere that a fascist boot has landed on the necks of the people.
I mean, for example, I was listening to this thing on the History Channel about Adolf Hitler. And his own older person who kept his household at the Berghof said that there were two jokes that Hitler would not permit. One would be political jokes, which obviously would be against his own agenda. And the second happened to be dirty jokes. And I wish to hell that Hitler had been more concerned with the lives of other people and what he did to them and the horrors he committed that he was being.
Well, look at the $70 million+ that were spent by Kenneth Starr over a consensual act of quasi sex.
Well, we all know what that was about.
Followed by 8 years of rampant, bloodthirsty obscenity that was never even investigated. You know,
I spent, what, $40 million on that investigation?
70.
Huh?
70.
70 million.
Plus, I mean, it probably goes, it's probably higher than that, but yes.
Well, I knew it was a very high figure. And it was basically, as far as I'm concerned, money wasted, and it was for, you know, their own ways to get Bill Clinton, not that he was any well, you know.
In an act of complete and utter prurience.
Yeah.
I mean, everything that was put into that Starr report, which turned out to be no report at all because there was no criminal conduct, was nothing but an attempt to titillate the weird, repressed, right-wing sexual longings that just grow like mushrooms after a spring rain from the Republican id.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. I really think so. Because I think,
I mean, from the cigar story to the pizza story to the, and see, the fact that I know them.
Well, I mean, it's the case, me thinks how that's protest too much. Because there's something hidden in their own psyche, in their own id.
Well, and we know that to be a fact, because so many of the people who were central to that process were themselves uber pervs.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, I mean, remember, at the same time that they were having a hissy about Bill Clinton, Newt was asking his then-wife for permission to bring ballistic into their bedroom.
Oh, wow.
And was going at her hammer and tongs. Banging her like a cheap gong.
you know, the hip-hop.
While screaming, well, you know, words mean things. The flag is falling. That was my favorite line. The flag is falling. I forget which right-wing turd said that one, Jim, but that was the big one. And of course, Rush Limbaugh. And you would, you know what? In a hazmat suit, you would not wander around inside that man. That man's libido. Yes, I mean, and him. My friends, what will we tell the children?
Oh, he's just an asshole. He's just a.
You know, here we are months later, and still nobody's seen Mrs. Limbaugh in a long, long time. I think she's in the pit.
Think so?
Yeah, if Rush hadn't gotten done making his woman suit yet.
Oh, yeah. Or she'll get the hose again.
Right. It puts the lotion on its skin.
Or it gets the hose again. These people are just totally fucked up. I mean, they really are.
Yeah, and see, now there's a... No other phrase would have sufficed.
No, it wouldn't. And I normally don't get into words like that, and you know that. But I do when I am confronted with stuff like this, and it's just absolutely hypocritical. It is antithetical in every way, and it's just their own way to impose their own bizarre view or worldview upon others who don't think like they do. And, you know, I simply don't understand it. I remember talking to some guy here, and he was all upset because the use of the word ass. And I said, well, what's wrong with that? I said, it's in the Bible. I said, so are hell and damn. And this is one of these people who is just,
and you know what? I guess a public school teacher in Arizona could not read the old, and you know, the right wingers, they love to have their Bible read in school, right?
Yeah.
But I guess you're not going to be reading that Bible story of Balaam's ass now, are you?
Oh, no. You can't covet your neighbor's ass or whatever. But, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is what I have to say. These people can kiss my ass.
Hear, Jim.
They can kiss my motherfucking ass. I am so tired of them straining at a net to swallow a camel. I am so tired, but I see the condition this country is in and has, you know, become under their tutelage and leadership. And yet they are trying to exalt themselves as some type of bastion of morality, and it is just so bogus.
Absolutely, and let's consider the anatomy of a right-wing outrage for a minute. This statute would be, I mean... Even with the rats on the Supreme Court, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, even with that bunch, I would hazard a guess that this statute would have to be stricken. It just has to be. Because it's repugnant. This statute is repugnant to virtually every free speech case that the Supreme Court has ever decided. With that in mind, let us consider the anatomy of a right-wing outrage. So, they're going to pass this law, and the day that hatchet-faced bottle blonde Jan Brewer signs it into law, if it does go that far, on the day that she does that, it will be a nullity because it will be stricken down first by a preliminary injunction and secondly, permanently. Now, when that is done, Jim, what will happen is the right-wingers, you know, we're only introducing this bill to protect our children. It's about the children because we have family values, all right? I mean, you can hear it. So that being the case, what they'll say after it's stricken down based upon 200 years of thinking on the First Amendment is, well, that's just a case of them liberal activist judges imposing their unelected will upon the morality and decency of good, upright, upstanding, God-fearing Americans. Right? I mean, isn't that exactly how this script will play?
I think that's a pretty good prognostication. It really is. Because that's exactly how they would react. I mean, they're all the time reacting about these judges that are making decisions they don't like. And so what they try to do is to, you know, protest in those terms and undermine the as far as I'm concerned, the legitimacy of law and the language in which it is written.
Because ultimately they want to destroy the entire framework, Jim. And for all the funning and fooling around we've had, saying the fun words, that is dead serious. The dead serious takeaway from this whole exchange, this whole thing in Arizona, is that Arizona right now and places like Alabama and Oklahoma and Kansas are serving as little laboratories for the absolute destruction of everything that we consider this republic to be based upon. Fair enough, you think?
It would appear so, yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, not appear, it is so.
I mean, there are so many examples. For instance, I read a fascinating story. I think it was Bill in Cleveland who sent it along to me earlier today. Apparently, there is a survey in Germany of the most important addition to the German language from English of the year. And it started in 2010, and we've got the 2011 example now or whatever. Last year's, and just imagine for a minute if you're in German class, let's say you're in German 4 at the University of Arizona or Arizona State, all right? Or let's say you're in a linguistics class, and I apply this to universities because universities are supposed to have a freer degree of inquiry, and this is within the classroom. You could not tell your students who were trying to appreciate German culture that this particular board of commissioners or whatever had said that the single most important English word added to the German language, the German lexicon, in the last year was shitstorm. Because their definition, they said, there's just no German word, and for a country that just piles words on words and makes compound nouns, it amazed me. But
yeah.
There's just no German word that really captures the essence of what that word means.
Well, I don't think there is either.
Scheitsturm.
Some of the shitstorms that have been placed upon other countries by this country. I mean, we really, as far as shitstorms are concerned, I mean, we're right up there with shock and awe and stuff like that and some of the stuff that's happened in the past 12 years.
And oddly enough, that word entered the German lexicon as a result of discussions centering on the fate of the euro and the eurozone parliament's treatment of debtor nations.
Right.
So the Germans now have a new word to describe what is going on in Greece right now, which incidentally is burning.
Yes.
It is a Scheitsturm.
Yeah, Scheitsturm, exactly. That's exactly what's going to happen, and it is happening right now.
But you couldn't tell a group of students of German culture at Arizona State, the University of Arizona, or any other public institution, you could not tell them that.
Well, you know, whether it's Chaucer with the bawdiness of the Canterbury Tales, and they were bawdy. They were bawdy back then. And it's, and you know, in regardless of whether it's Middle English or whatever, or whether it's Edward Albee and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, or Tennessee Williams, or any other authors like that who are trying to...
God damn it, Big Daddy!
Exactly. I mean, this is the... to me, this principle is sacrosanct. And if they're going to try to redact everything and eliminate it and invoke these horrible punishments, for example, like removing a professor who has tenure, I don't know.
Well, I mean, how do you suspend a tenured professor?
Well, Bob, I mean, you're, as far as tenure is concerned, I mean, you know what tenure is. Tenure, when you become tenured, your job becomes your property.
Yes.
As such, is protected by the 14th Amendment, that you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That's the basis of tenure. Yes, is it not?
Yes.
Well,
and that's what I'm asking. How do you suspend a tenured professor? Now, underneath all of this, of course, is an assault on organized teachers, because the so-called teachers' unions are despised.
I'll tell you how you do it. You do it the same way that the Nuremberg laws did upon tenured professors who were tenured in Germany. Okay? That's how you do it. That's exactly how you do it. If we want to get cut right down and get to and slosh away the epidermis and the reticular tissue and get right down to the meat of things, as Martha would say, the meat of things. That's exactly how you do it. The Nuremberg laws suspended professors who were tenured, not because of what they said, but because of their ancestry. And this is not too far away from that, and that's the reason I mentioned this as an example.
Well, and you know, that takes me to another place, Jim. I was reading today earlier, Sandra had sent me a link about libertarians and free love. This was, I mean, I was screaming, but it referenced a piece of writing by Ludwig von Mises. And how women's rights were an attempt to inject socialism into blah, 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 blah. So that led me naturally to go, I've heard about this guy, read about him periodically. So I went and read some biographical stuff on him. This guy was basically Austro-Hungarian nobility. And then the Austro-Hungarian Empire, of course, went the way of all flesh after the First World War. He left for Switzerland, but then with the rise of the Nazis, he, being Jewish, was afraid that the Germans would march on Switzerland and that he would be treated the way Germans treat Jews,
right,
or treated Jews. So he left and came to America, where he poured out his poisonous right-wing, hate-filled economic theories until for another 29 years, until he went to his long home, as it says in Ecclesiastes. And it's so bizarre, because here's a person advocating for clampdowns who is fleeing repression so he can come to a more open society to advocate a different kind of repression. You know, jumping Jehoshaphat, Jim.
Like I say, it's hypocrisy. And my regards to Sandra for sending you some of the stuff she does, because she does contribute a great deal to this program.
Well, thank you, Jim, on Sandra's behalf, because sometimes I think this, well, and maybe we're too far into it to say to use the future tense, but sometimes I think this nation will be its own demise. In terms of what it just allows to get traction. You know, I had an email from Andy over the weekend saying thanking me for bringing up that little passage from the New York Times story about Ron Paul, where it talks about how he praised the guy who flouted the rationing laws during the Second World War as some sort of free market answer to government mischief. That was the quote. And, of course, we now know that Ron Paul thinks the United States never should have gotten into the Second World War. But I can't get away from that passage from that New York Times story, Jim, simply because it is such a perfect picture of what these right-wing libertarian types would gladly do to their own country. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine praising?
What it is, and, you know, and I praise Andy because he brings, he's another caller who brings a great deal to this program. But what these people are trying to do is to commit some type of War of the Roses on this nation, a bloodletting operation. It would appear to me as though they wish for this country and all it stands for to simply go away and die of exsanguination, of being bled to death. And that's what these people are. They're leeches. They're trying to bleed this country to death of the very blood that keeps it moving. And what they try to do in making it into their own image is some type of golem.
Yeah.
And am I making any sense here?
Yes, you are. And your mention of exsanguination, it is the death by a thousand cuts applied to the Constitution as well.
And that's exactly what Norquist was talking about government. He's not talking about putting it in the bathtub. He's talking about putting a scalpel into the artery of government and letting it simply die of loss of blood or exsanguination. That's exactly what these people want to do. To every program.
And they just got done having a big old convention telling the world how badly they want to do it. You know, the CPAC convention was over the weekend, and it was just a parade of the bizarre. You could have gone to, I don't know, the adult video news convention and seen more normalcy.
Probably. And what they want to do is by cutting off funding to agencies that are designed to help and ameliorate conditions. And what they want to do is to cut off the funding little by little, until they die. Because without funding, they can't exist. And I've been in government long enough to realize that.
And the thing is, once they've killed government, the real bloodletting begins, because then they start, they've started down the road of killing we the people, because we are the government, whether we acknowledge it or not. The government is not faceless bureaucrats operating without regard to people's well-being. Most of the government workers I've ever known are very, very devoted to doing the right thing for the people they serve.
I was, Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent 20 years in federal service. I know exactly how, if they want to kill a program, how they kill it. They simply don't fund it. And I know how insidious these people can be, and how little by little, not by one sword stroke, but by a minor incision that becomes a major loss of blood or loss of funding. So I've said my piece, and so there it is, and I just find it, like I say, I simply can't get my head around some of this stuff, because I guess my little gray cells, as L.Q. Poirot would say,
aren't working so well today. I don't think it's got anything to do with your little gray cells. I think it's the malevolence of theirs.
You know, sometimes I tell you the truth, sometimes I just think I'm being fucked and not even be given a reach around.
As is 99% of the country. The 99%.
I'm not that verbal about stuff like this, but I don't like this, and I see where it's coming. I see where it's been. I read history. I know history. That was my education. Government gave me my training, and I know what's coming around the bend. I know what they're going to do next.
When you hear the train whistle in the distance, it's usually a train.
You know, you don't have to be Nostradamus, and you don't have to be Sun Tzu to realize exactly what type of strategy and tactics are being employed here. And it's being done assiduously, it's being done with great precision and determination. And I really don't know what can stop these people. I really don't. I don't know.
The first, you know, that old saying is so true. The greatest, sunlight is the greatest disinfectant. And to the extent that this little show plays any part at all, Jim, you are a part of stopping it. Because we are creating the awareness that it is going on. You know,
I hope so, because a lot of people I talk to and have talked to, like, for example, in South Carolina, and family members and stuff like that, what's left of my family. But you know, they seem to be going along with some of this stuff, and they seem to defend it, and they seem to say, well, you know, you don't think that's right, or what's your problem with this? And when I'm confronted with those types of questions, I really don't know how to answer them.
Right, and the ubiquitous, well, you've got nothing to fear if you haven't done anything wrong.
Oh, yeah, fear. And that's the staple of their whole
fear
strategy, is fear. And what they want to do is to scare people into submission where they do not want to talk or push back or talk against what they're doing. And they've forgotten, you know, and they're predicating this upon fear, but fear itself, as spoken by FDR, which FDR realized back in the dark days of World War II. You have nothing to fear but fear itself. And once you begin to fear fear and be scared, and that's what they want. They want people to be frightened. They want them to be scared into not voicing how they feel and going along with their own agenda. Just the way Adolf Hitler did in pre-World War II in the 30s. And the way that Stalin operated back in Germany when he was, when he was destroying the entire Soviet Defense Force in the purges of 1937, or whether it's Pol Pot or any other totalitarian regime, they operate upon the principles of fear. And once they succeeded in doing that, they'll get their way. And to me, it is scary. And the only thing you can do is talk out upon it, talk against it.
And you're gonna absolutely love this. David in Tennessee just sent this in. The woman that I told you about, who's one of the co-sponsors of this Arizona legislation, her name is Klein. The one who pulled a gun on a reporter and pointed it at his chest. Well, she also went riding to the defense. I guess in Arizona, one goes riding. Went riding to the defense of Herman Cain when he was being accused of sexual harassment, Jim. You want to know the nature of her defense?
I'd love to hear it.
She said, I have known Herman Cain for 12 years, and he's, and this is a quote, never been anything but a gentleman, and I am not an unattractive woman. Close quotes.
And the point of that is?
I guess that only ugly, non-white women are likely to be sexually harassed by Herman Cain. This is the kind of reasoning used by one of the minds that sponsored this dirty word legislation, which is so much more than that, in Arizona.
And this woman pulled a gun on somebody?
A reporter.
Well, not in addition to being criminal, she's also nuts. You just don't do that to reporters. You don't whip out a 45 Magnum or whatever the hell she pulled out on that guy without being unstable or mentally unbalanced.
Yeah, but the thing is, it is both of those things, Jim. But in a place like Arizona, it's patriotic to pull a gun because it shows you're cherishing your Second Amendment right to keep an armed bears.
Well, Bob, I'll tell you this right now, and I'm not trying to be provocative here, but if I'm going to have to pull out a gun on somebody, I'm going to use it.
That's not provocative. Every expert in the handling of firearms has, and there was a time when I carried one. Okay?
Me too.
Has said, don't ever pull that thing out unless the next thing you're going to do is pull the trigger.
And believe you me, I've had to do that.
I never did. I never drew it, but it was there.
I don't like to talk about it, but I've had to do it. And believe you me, in any situation, whether it's self-defense or whatever, it doesn't cause you to sleep very well at night.
No. By the way, you got a little fan mail in from Andy in regard to what you were saying about tenured professors. He said, look what the trustees at the University of Colorado did to Ward Churchill.
He said, those were great comments from Jim. Excellent points. If you speak against the Bush administration, quote, the chickens coming home to roost comment, that's what Ward Churchill said about 9/11, and infer that maybe we deserve some blame, some retribution for the 9/11 attacks, and if you make those opinions in an open forum, denying that they hate us because of our freedoms, just maybe there were other reasons behind 9/11, and you're gone, they will take away your livelihood, which is what they did to Ward Churchill. If you speak the truth against the reactionary, a ton of bricks will come down on you. Again, this is what they did to Ward Churchill.
And basically what they tried to do was to bleed the man to death by taking away his means of existing or having a salary or a position in society. And that's how they do it. Yep. They just take away everything you have.
And Kim writing in from Florida, she says, let Jim know that I appreciate his views. He's so easy to hear and so down-home with his approach to life. His southern drawl don't hurt at all, neither. Signed, Kim.
Is it that bad?
It's not bad at all.
Well, I know that I have a peculiar way of speaking sometimes, but I can't help it. It's just the way I was.
No, she loves it. She loves it. And that's one of the beautiful things about what happens here, is there are people all over the country and all over the world who never hear a southern accent, Jim, unless it's talking about family values. You know what I mean? But on this program, we get people communicating from all over the South, behind the cornbread curtain, as I've noted, who talk sense. And you'd be surprised the number of emails I get that say, you know, Bob, it's just refreshing to know that...
Well, I speak out. I don't refer to family values that are hypocritical, that are inimical, and that are destructive to people because of sex, because of their sexual orientation, or because of their political disagreement with those individuals who are simply trying to destroy the country that I grew up in and defended and worked to support.
There you go. Exactly.
I don't understand how these people can be that damn stupid. But it's more than stupidity. It is planned. It is...
Right. It's the difference between negligence and intentional conduct.
Yeah, they do so with great avidity. And on that note, I will bid you good night and let somebody else have this microphone.
All right. Take care, Jim. Thanks a bunch.
All right. Have a good night.
You too. Bye now. It's our buddy Jim. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
Well, hey, Kevin, how are you?
Doing okay. Wow. You know, everybody on the right or left, you'll hear people say our country's in real trouble. But when you started reading that bill tonight, I couldn't help but think, gosh, have we gone that far? I just can't believe that this country has gotten to the point it's gotten to where a bill like this, you know.
And again, let's be clear, this is not
left out of the House.
This has not been made law.
No. Mm-mm.
But it has been introduced in what is a little test lab of absolute right-wing fascism in this country, and that right now is the state of Arizona, just like it's the state of Alabama, just like it's the state of Oklahoma, just like it's the state of Kansas.
Yep, and I keep thinking of three things that I'm fond of. They that do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Yep.
Religion is the opiate of the people, and workers of the world rise up. The only thing you have to do is lose the chains.
Yeah,
and you know we're. I think we're to that third point now, where it's time to either rise up or roll over and let them take the country. Because a bill like this, yes, I know it's going to go to court. It's not going to be passed. I don't think even this Supreme Court would pass it. But the way things are going, who knows? You know, and that's the scary part because, wow, I just can't believe that a bill like that could even be introduced.
Well, Kevin, transport yourself for just a minute. Take yourself back 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, go back 30 years and tell yourself 30 years ago that 30 years hence, the Supreme Court of the United States would rule that corporations were people with more rights than flesh and blood people.
Yep.
Now, what does yourself 30 years ago say to the visiting self from the present? That couldn't happen. It's impossible.
There's no way it could happen. And that's I guess, I put the, you know, Jim said it's more than stupidity. And for the people, the average everyday people that are right-wing conservative, it is ignorance. But if you were charging them criminally, you would have to charge them with something more than just criminally negligent homicide, so to speak. You'd actually have to charge them with manslaughter because ignorance is not a defense. You know, I mean, we've heard it said, ignorance of the law or not knowing the law is not a defense, and that's what's happening here. People have numerous examples throughout history of what this is that's happening, and yet the right-wing conservatives, the average Joe on the street right-wing conservative down in Alabama-stan or Georgia-stan or Florida-stan, they're all just letting it happen. And that's the sad part to me, is that those people, like Jim said, when you get asked a question, what's the problem? What's your problem with this bill? Why do you have a problem with it? And you don't know how to answer, it's because the first thing, you're taken aback by somebody even asking you why you have a problem with it.
Well, let me give you an illustrative example of exactly that principle, Kevin, if I may. Back in 1996, West Virginia nominated for the first time ever, the West Virginia Democratic Party nominated for the first time ever a female to run for governor. Her name was Charlotte Pritt. The man who would later become governor of the state of West Virginia, a man named Joe Manchin, who is now busily introducing legislation and voting with Republicans in the Senate of the United States. He recently introduced bipartisan legislation with Marco Rubio of Florida to repeal the Obama administration's infringement upon the rights of the Catholic Church. No, really. Back then, Charlotte Pritt had been a grade school teacher. Okay? Charlotte was a very good human being. She had also sat in the legislature at the same time that Joe Manchin sat in the legislature, both of them members of the West Virginia Senate.
Yep.
Charlotte had, being the good progressive liberal that she was, had advocated for sex education in the schools, you know, to cut down on things like sexually transmitted diseases and teen pregnancy. Well, by the time that Joe Manchin was running against her in that primary in 1996, he was smearing her up one wall and down the other with the claim, Charlotte Pritt wants to teach kindergartners about condoms. Okay?
Yep.
And this may not seem directly on point, but let me tie the loop here. You mentioned people who don't know how to respond to a bill like what we're discussing in Arizona. And that is exactly the problem. Because if you criticize this bill, you know, just a couple of Joes sitting there at the barber shop or whatever, the response is, well, I guess then you want our first grade teachers to be using dirty words in front of the children. What are you, some sort of sicko? And the person backs down. Well, no, that's not what I meant. I mean, that's what you just said. I mean, I know how this crap works.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes it's just pure frustration of, I really don't want to have to explain to you what freedom and democracy mean. You're 20 years older than me, and you should know that, you know. Because that's the whole thing of what you're just saying there with her. You know, it's not about teaching kindergartners about condoms. But, of course, down in the South, they have a problem with sex anyway.
I mean, we have a statute in this state that says when fifth graders get to the point in science class where they talk about human reproduction,
mm-hmm.
you have the right as a parent to pull your child out of that class.
Yep.
That's like saying you've got a right to pull your child out of the part of math class that talks about long division.
Yep.
No, no, because human reproduction, that's something that's best handled in the church for some people. And naturally, of course, the fundamentalists are the ones who have some of the highest teen pregnancy rates in the nation.
Yep, that's what I was going to say. I wonder if they've ever done a study of the kids that got pulled out of that class versus the kids that stayed in that class.
Oh, they've done a much larger study. You remember, did you hear the story? It's before you started listening to the horn, Kevin, but I'm sure you may have run across it somewhere. Did you ever hear about purity rings and purity balls and abstinence pledges among fundamentalist children?
Oh, yeah.
You know, little girls and little boys would wear a little ring, and they had these ceremonies where little girls would pledge their purity to their daddies, and daddy would put a ring on their finger. I mean, just real creepy stuff, okay? You know, Dr. Freud, emergency, Dr. Freud. Well, it turned out they studied him. And those children that made those fundamentalist purity pledges were more likely to have sex earlier than children who were just taught straight up about, you know, sex.
Yep. Well, when you were asking me if I remembered that, I also remember chastity belts. You know, I mean, that...
Now, let's not be talking about things that get right-wingers all worked up.
Yeah.
And I don't mean in a righteous frenzy. I mean, you know.
Well, it just is very scary to me that we've came this far, and I think it's time we as progressives or whatever you want to call yourself, it's time to start standing up and say something. You really can't be on the sidelines anymore. The more you stay on the sidelines, the more they're going to get away with things like this. I just can't believe it's happening in my country. That's what I have the biggest problem with. If I'd have heard about this story from some third world country and a third world dictator, it wouldn't surprise me as much. But it's happening here, now. And 30 years from now, where are we going to be as a country? And my prediction is, probably 50 years from now, I think you're going to see this country divided into three or four separate state/regions. I don't think it'll be the United States of America.
No, it'll be the old republic, the West Coast, and Jesus Land.
Exactly.
And the old republic will run roughly from Minnesota to Maine. Maybe might include Indiana. Will include perhaps Ohio, but Pennsylvania, New York, you know, the 13 colonies, not the 13 colonies, the northern colonies. But then Jesus Land will be everything from Kentucky and Missouri and the Midwestern states southward. And then California, Oregon, maybe Arizona if they ever get their act together, and Washington. And this might be in 100 years. Might be in 50 for all we know.
I think it's closer to 50. I really do. I just can't believe what I'm watching, particularly out of Arizona. You know, you've got a governor that disrespects the president, points her finger at him on national TV, and at the same time you've got this Lori Klein. Well, and speaking of which, wasn't when she pulled that gun on the reporter, wasn't that a few months after Gabrielle Giffords got shot?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And then, you mentioned Gabrielle Giffords. You know, here's maybe some people will take issue with this, but Ray Mabus of Mississippi, who is presently the Secretary of the Navy, recently named a United States Navy combat vessel after Gabrielle Giffords. It's an LCS, a landing craft, and, a troop carrier of some sort.
Yep.
The previous two had been named after cities. One of them is the Montgomery, and the other one was, I can't remember what. But the third one is named the Gabrielle Giffords.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't help reading that story, Kevin, and thinking, wouldn't it have been far more appropriate to name, say, a new naval hospital brain injury wing after her, or a hospital after her, or a hospital ship after her?
Yep.
Instead of a naval vessel that's going to be designed to go and inflict more brain injuries?
Yep.
Of course, that may just consign me to the perpetual crankhood. I don't know. She was a big, you know, she was, as Democrats go, you know, a big pro-Pentagon hawk. So maybe they're just thrilled about it.
Well, even being thrilled about it, I would probably much rather have my name attached to a hospital ship as opposed to a warship, you know. But I guess whatever floats your boat, so to speak.
Yeah.
But in a way, it's a compliment that he named a ship after. I'm shocked that the conservatives actually let him get away with that. You know, I can't believe that they actually let him do that without screaming and yelling about it, particularly since the first two were named after cities. So, in a sense, I'm okay with it that way. But yeah, I agree with you. There's a brain injury award would be where I'd want her name attached to, because of we've seen her struggle publicly to try and get back as much function as she can. And, you know, that has to be inspiring to some of the people that have brain injuries. So, yeah, I would go for the hospital or the brain injury ward, whatever, to name it after her instead of a warship. But that's just me, I guess. You know, I don't know. I wanted to mention one other thing, too. You were talking about the drug testing?
Yes.
Some state senator down here in Colorado just introduced, he wants to do drug testing for those of us that have Medicare and Medicaid. And I thought, how lovely, you know. It's another intrusion like you were talking about. They want to control your life, even when you're out of your job, you know. He said he wanted to make sure that the funds they were giving to help people didn't go to buying drugs. And I thought to myself,
that is a fad among right wingers right now. It's all over states that are controlled by right wing legislatures. Want to make sure that the taxpayer dollar is not being used to fund anybody's filthy habits. And for instance, the classic story is that of Tripp, whatever his name was. A right-wing member of the Georgia legislature who introduced such a bill, and then days later was popped for DUI, you know, broad daylight. We're not talking about, you know, midnight and only trying to make it home or anything. No, he'd been out having a few pops at the bar over a burger and, you know, at three, I'll take another beer, and DUI, but no, we're not going to drug test the members of the legislature. They tried that in Alabama, and an Alabama legislator did, in fact, try to amend the bill for drug testing of members of the legislature drawing taxpayer salaries.
Well, I think, you know, if they're going to drug test me, who is on a program, Social Security disability, that I paid into, it's not a giveaway. If they're wanting to drug test me, I think they ought to be drug tested themselves. And I just bet you that the incidence of drug usage, if that ever were to happen, would be higher among them than among the group of disabled and poor. I just bet you the drug might be a little bit more expensive, but I bet the incidence of usage would be higher amongst that group of legislators. So, but I just wanted to call in and say, you know, I was sitting here expecting a nice, easy, more on Monday, and, you know, we might talk about Femtorum or Gingrich, but no, you had to talk about this bill, and I'm glad you did. But it, I didn't realize our country had gone this far. I really didn't. So, my plea before I go is for those of us on the so-called progressive side to please start standing up wherever you can and speaking out against this stuff, because we can't remain silent any longer. We just can't.
No, we can't. And I know you're not, and I appreciate it. Kevin, you have yourself a good evening.
Hey, will you do me a favor and leave me on hold for a couple minutes until I get my computer fired back up?
Sure. Stand by.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. That's Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Talk about Belly of the Beast. That is, of course, Colorado Springs, the home of increasingly religionized Air Force Academy, and the home, of course, of Focus on the Family and Dr. James Dobson, who likes for children to be beaten until they cry real tears and suggests that little boys be taken into showers by their father and have their penises, the man show his penis to the little boy to keep him from catching the homosexual. Jeebus. One bright note, non-Moran related, bright note that I don't want this program to go by without making mention of, and that is the happy moment that happened today in the state of Washington, where full constitutional rights have been accorded to the gay community in that state, because they now have marriage equality. Two guys or two women who happen to love each other and want to spend their lives together are now free to marry in the state of Washington. On the time out. On the other hand, you have something I saw over the weekend, rather distressing. You have these sick freaks in the state of, well, in the Old Dominion in Virginia, where the legislature is at present enshrining in law the right of private adoption agencies to turn away potential parents based on their sexual orientation or based upon their religious and moral beliefs. Maybe I should have saved this for Wednesday, but it also seems appropriate here. They are adding, in point of fact, something called a conscience clause to Virginia law that would allow, this from the Washington Post, mind you, state-funded, faith-based agencies. You got that? State-funded, faith-based agencies. In other words, private religious adoption agencies that are funded with state monies to choose which parents are suitable for adoption based upon that agency's beliefs. Somewhere down here, it says that they want to make sure, this measure will chisel into law. Chiselers. This measure will chisel into law the principle that people of faith can adhere to their convictions without fear of reprisal from those who would discriminate against their religious beliefs regarding how we should raise our children. That's from House Deputy Majority Leader C. Todd Gilbert. Since he only uses the initial, one can only imagine what the C stands for. And as I tweeted over the weekend, it is patently offensive, this notion that religious zealots are the only ones who have morals or consciences? What about the conscience of a gay couple who are willing to open their home to an abused or neglected child who has never known a moment's peace in his or her little life? Nope. That child can stay in foster care. Instead of being adopted out. Because the Commonwealth of Virginia wants to enshrine bigotry. Amazing, coming from the same state that had its miscegenation statute stricken down under, what was it, Loving versus Virginia, isn't it? So to recap, the state of Virginia is going to enshrine bigotry so as to protect the religious freedom of the bigots. Arizona, Virginia. I guess we should have added Virginia to that. On the other hand, Virginia struck, got its Sharia law statute withdrawn. Why? Because the business community said, now wait a minute here. That ain't going to be good for business. And Virginia likes them some business. And then there's this. Sweet Jeebus. Then there's this. Liz Trotta. You've probably heard about Liz by now. But she picked up on the theme enunciated by the frothy one, who is feeling, I guess he's the froggy frothy one. He's feeling quite froggy right now that he's been anointed. It took him a long time. I mean, we had to go through Herman Cain and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachman and Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul. But finally, Rick Frothy Mixture, Bro Fromix Santorum, who incidentally was found at Tyson's Corners, Virginia this past weekend, sitting down to a meal of sushi with his family. Having a pint of Guinness, some calamari, and some quesadillas at a little concern called McCormick and Schmick's, and then ordered tuna and California rolls. You know, sushi. And asked, I guess, rhetorically, or perhaps a waitress or waiter, hey, in regard, of course, to the sushi, to the tuna and California roll, hey, is this stuff cooked? You knew we couldn't get through Moran Monday without a Rick Santorum nomination. Is this stuff cooked? We finally got a decent little sushi restaurant in Beckley. And it's nice to sit down and have a couple of pieces of tuna, maybe. A lot healthier than the burgers with which I'm... Well, I can't go there very often either, but damn. Now, a California roll, of course, has that crab stick in it, which is, of course, pasteurized, processed fish food kind of stuff. The tuna? You can't tell by looking at the tuna? Hey, is this stuff cooked? Damn, it looks a lot like my son. Ooh, Bob, you're nasty. Purple lizard. Thank you, Albert. No. It was Rick Santorum's, the frothy one's, assertion that women don't need to be in combat because people become more emotional. Now, he's had to walk that back and say, well, what I meant is the men would be trying to protect the women. They're the emotional ones, the men. Women can fly small aircraft. I feel almost bad for saying this, but Rick, you've apparently gotten through life without anyone ever teaching you the first law of holes. When you're in one, stop digging. Did you know that John McCain referred to Rick Santorum as quite possibly, in his long career in the Senate, one of the dumbest human beings he had ever seen occupy an office therein, that body? And that's coming from cranky old Grandpa McCain. But no, Liz Trotta, over at Radio Rwanda, more in nomination number, I'm not sure what at this point, said that, well, she picked up on the frothy one's assertion that women are unfit for combat. Let's let her do it all by herself.
Women in combat, should they serve closer to the front lines? Oh, this past week, the Pentagon announced some new rules for women in the military that will do just that. How is the media covering this? Liz Trotta, author, journalist, and Fox News contributor, joins us every Sunday at this time with the commentary. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Eric.
So this is now causing a controversy.
Well, it's not. It's a controversy that won't be a controversy because of political correctness.
Okay.
But we have women once more, the feminists, wanting to be warriors and victims at the same time. So what is the news? The news is that the Pentagon is going to add 14,000 more jobs for women in the military. But the overall ban against serving in the infantry, in special operations units, and combat tank units is still in place. Well, you may ask, why did 140 women die in Afghanistan and Iraq if this ban was in place? Well, the whole way we wage war has changed enormously. No front lines, no clear delineation of where troops are. Women can be attached to battalions, but they can't actually be in battalions. That would get down to the real guts of how we fight wars, and that is being a member of the infantry. But while all of this is going on, just a few weeks ago, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta commented on a new Pentagon report on sexual abuse in the military. I think they've actually discovered there's a difference between men and women. And the sexual abuse report says that there's been, since 2006, a 64% increase in violent sexual assaults. Now, what did they expect? These people are in close contact. The whole airing of this issue has never been done by Congress. It's strictly been a question of pressure from the feminists. And the feminists have also directed them, really, to spend a lot of money. They have sexual counselors all over the place, victims advocates.
I mean, you caught that what did they expect part, right? And the sexual abuse report says that there's been, since 2006, a 64% increase in violent sexual assaults. Now, what did they expect?
But we're not done.
Sexual response coordinators. Let me just read something for you from McClatchy newspapers about how much this position on extreme feminism is costing us. The budget for the Defense Department's Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Office leapt from $5 million in fiscal 2005 to more than $23 million in fiscal 2010. Total Defense Department spending on sexual assault prevention and related efforts now exceeds $113 million annually.
Annually?
Now, poor Liz Trotta, this is what the right wing does. They take a general statement and they try to shoehorn it into some level of specificity. Now, that's $113 million for sexual assault prevention. A lot of that is about teaching soldiers and sailors and Marines and airmen and whatever, don't go raping the locals. It's not all about don't rape your fellow soldier. But Liz Trotta ain't done yet. Oh, no.
From McClatchy newspaper. So you have this whole bureaucracy upon bureaucracy being built up with all kinds of levels of people to support women in the military who are now being raped too much.
Ha! Ha!
Has she been hanging out with Ron Paul and the good, honest rape crowd? Raped too much? One could only ask Liz Trotta what an acceptable level of troop rape is. But then again, what did those female soldiers expect? The extension of that is that necessarily they should expect to be raped. And I knew the sushi comment would get Jim going. Good Lord, does he like his vichyssoise served hot? Piping, Jim, piping! Spike noting, shocking ass juice was in Virginia with his family, meaning Frothy. He lived there full-time during his last term as PA senator. Claimed his vacation home in Pennsylvania as his residence so he could be senator in Pennsylvania. The guy was born in Virginia, and his kids went to school year-round in Virginia. Now that is election fraud, if I ever saw it. False residency of a candidate. Where the hell is his photo ID? Asks Spike. Andy, regarding the ship being named after Arizona's Representative Gabby Giffords, evidently in Washington, her unfortunate shooting carries a lot of weight, big-time sympathy. At an open house for local Representative Jackie Speier, the Congresswoman began her talk with a moment of silence and prayer for Representative Giffords. All I could think of was how about a prayer for the 45,000 to 50,000 people who die in this country because they don't have health care. Why don't the Congress people start with a prayer and moment of silence for them? Yes, Representative Gabrielle Giffords was a tragedy, but isn't the death from lack of health care occurring to the proletariat a bigger one? I guess the unnecessary deaths of thousands in the proletariat just doesn't compare to one congresswoman. And there is a sad reflection of reality in that. I gotta admit, David in Tennessee got me. The reference to the assistant majority leader in Virginia who is promulgating the bill to make sure that we enshrine bigotry. Enshrine religious and sexual bigotry to protect the religious freedom of the bigots. What was that guy's name again? C. Todd what? C. Todd jackass. C. Todd sneak around in the dark and not try to get caught? Never mind. No. C. Todd Gilbert. Shenandoah. I had an uncontrollable giggle there that I had to quickly suppress. That was not a sneeze. That whole thing in Virginia. this rises to the level of what Albert did to me last week. That whole thing in Virginia. Bob, the poor thing has a real problem. That C stands for clitoris. His mama heard the word in the hospital, and the folks doing the paperwork didn't catch it before it became official. Hang on. Poor thing in Virginia. The eye, Bob, the eye. God almighty. Oh, God, the things you people do to me. Before we wrap up for the evening, and we are quickly running out of time, a note for us all from our buddy Dr. John in New York. Sunday was something besides Abraham Lincoln's birthday. It was another birthday. One not as widely noted, but probably deserved as much or more celebration. Dr. John in New York writes, Bob, as you probably know, Sunday marked the 203rd anniversary of Charles Darwin's birth. I wanted to offer some thoughts on this remarkable man and his legacy. I don't consider myself a scientist. The sorts of things that I'm interested in studying don't lend themselves to hypothesis testing and formal theorizing. Nevertheless, Darwin is one of my scientific heroes for one reason. His theory of natural selection is, quite simply, beautifully elegant. What do I mean by that? In science, a theory is judged to be elegant when it makes a minimum of assumptions and then explains a great deal of things. Natural selection is perhaps the most elegant theory in the history of science. It starts with two self-evident observations. One, a certain amount of variation exists within the biological traits of an animal population. Some woodpeckers have longer beaks than others, for example. And two, not every member of a population survives to reproduce. It then makes one very simple but critical assumption. Biological traits become more or less common due to differential survival and reproduction. One simple critical assumption. Biological traits become more or less common due to differential survival and reproduction. From that one assumption, says Dr. John, it explains pretty much everything about the history of life on Earth. Stop and think about that for a second. From one tiny assumption to basically infinite explanation, it is staggering to think of how simple it is, really. Perhaps that's the problem. Natural selection seems so obvious, its workings are so subtle, so commonsensical, that it doesn't appear to be working at all. And remember that Darwin came up with all this in a time when we were completely ignorant of genetics. Genes are the very mechanism of natural selection. They're what carries the variation that results in those different physical traits. For Darwin to explain natural selection without knowing how it works is something akin to envisioning the Indianapolis 500 before the wheel is invented. It's amazing as well to think that Darwin was 22 years old when he set off on the HMS Beagle for what became a 5-year voyage around the world. And you wonder where that line, "its 5-year mission," came from. It took him until 1858, 22 years after his return to England, to publish the theory. And it came about largely because a naturalist named Alfred Russel Wallace was preparing a paper saying nearly the same things Darwin was thinking. So papers by Darwin and Wallace were both presented to a London Scientific Society on the same day. Imagine being there. It would have seemed like just an ordinary day, with no sense that everything people thought about nature and humanity's place in it was being rocked. Wallace, incidentally, embraced spiritualism soon after. But he was also a socialist and an activist for women's suffrage and against militarism. It is a sad commentary on the contemporary U.S. that Darwin needs explaining and defending. Roger Ebert wrote a post honoring Darwin on his 200th anniversary. He makes reference to a previous column from a few years back that had gotten something like 150,000 comments. He claims to have read each of them, and that practically none of the anti-Darwin crowd came from outside the U.S. intelligent design group. Intelligent design, he concludes, is basically an American preoccupation. John notes, there are people in my field who have tried to jump on the Darwin bandwagon applying natural selection to explain variation in Native American artifacts. Yeah, it's just as dumb as it sounds. Dr. John, I will remind you, is an archaeologist. And there is a crowd called sociobiologists who like to look for evolutionary reasons to explain, for example, why men rape women. As you can imagine, that gets us to a really dark place really quickly. But none of that, says Dr. John, invalidates Darwin's contribution or the sheer beauty of his theory. You know, they gave, they endowed a chair. I think, doesn't Stephen Hawking still hold the Isaac Newton chair in physics at Cambridge or Oxford or wherever? Is there a Darwin chair? Shouldn't there be? You can't say Darwin in this neck of the woods without having some idiot, ill-informed jackass spit on the ground and talk. I just trying to disprove the existence of God's what he's trying to do, Darwin. I didn't come from no monkey. That's not what it's about at all, is it? An elegant explanation for virtually every aspect of life on this little blue-green marble of a time machine hurtling through the universe. It's kind of nice to close out Moran Monday with an example of what's not one. So thanks for joining in this evening. I really appreciate it. Thanks for the one kind contribution that came in during the course of the program. It is greatly appreciated. That means we will enter tomorrow's program hoping to raise $90 to go with the $100 we hope to raise tomorrow and each and every day as we move toward the complete filling out of the Thrifty 250 on a monthly basis. Thanks much for your ideas, your comments, your emails, your participation in the chat room, your phone calls, the time that you spend in this conversation, even if you say nothing at all. Thank you. Because, well, your presence matters. Showing up is, after all, half the battle, right? Thanks to the all-volunteer staff that makes all of this work. Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist Reverbo, my head writer David in Tennessee, back from what was apparently an awesome drive-by truckers concert. Thanks to John Fox in Australia, and thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, well, thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there and learn about the work, the heroic work of Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.